Prizes.
Yeah.
Yeah, stupid prizes go to stupid people who do stupid things. And that is how we're starting today's show. Welcome to the Tuesday Live Coffee Chat with John Willis from Special Operations Equipment, Jack Spierko from the Survival Podcast. I'm Nicole Sauce from Living Free in Tennessee. It's been a whole month and the whole world's different, right? John, what do you see different since last month?
I have tons of peaches.
Oh, moving through the country.
Seems like more people wrestling with snakes in the water, getting bit by cobras.
Are you going to show the listeners that, or are you just going to?
Nah. I keep seeing them though. Like, I keep looking at it? Probably.
We might be getting a strike for that one, given where the dude got bit.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, you guys. Okay, so last time we are talking about Berkey water filters. John pumps out with the word colloidal silver, and we're just talking about the court case against them.
Yeah,
I got marked for medical misinformation, and it's still there because I haven't gone to re-education school, and they took the video down. I appeal it because I go to where they say, I'm like, there is plenty of stuff we said on that video that would be construed as medical misinformation, but not that. Like, literally, it's like, this is what the law case is about. And, appealed it and did not win the appeal because actual people don't actually look at it. Yeah.
No. So, I won mine, though, for the same reason.
I am still marked as a medical misinformation channel, and I decided I didn't really care.
I won mine, though, for the same episode.
I didn't get it
for what Nicole got it for.
What'd you get it for?
I got a copyright violation from Usher because I played that dude that did the parody song, and apparently Usher's music label dropped their copyright claim against me.
That just means they pull part of your monetization for the music.
No, they tell you if they do that. They'll say either, like, you get a piece of it or the copyright owner gets all of it. And basically, it said Usher Music, Inc. or whatever has dropped their copyright claim against you because somebody from them probably did actually look at it because they probably have to say accept or reject. And when they saw this Asian dude singing a parody song, they're like, yeah, okay. All right.
I think ours is just so unmonetized that they don't even hit us for most of that. We've done a couple where we're just at the end, we're like, we can't put this to YouTube. Just put it up on Patreon.
I just got another strike and I took the re-education. Go take your re-education camp, Nicole. It's not hard. It's like you answer five questions and when you get one wrong, they just say, like, you're almost there. Try again. So it's just you don't actually have to do anything. And then it'll go away in 90 days or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't even remember what it was now, but it was from a video that was like 4 years old.
Yeah.
And they dug up out of nowhere and gave me a strike on. Oh, it was actually from a podcast I did in 2012 talking about the rise of someone like Trump. And I when Trump got elected, so this is 2017 is when this video is from. So that's even older. What's that? Freaking 8 years. I made this video where I took that segment from 2012 and put some pictures in it. And one is the picture of like when Mussolini's guys all got strung up in the streets. And that's what they hit me for violent imagery without context. From a video 8 years old.
Crazy. We were getting hit on COVID violation stuff for misinformation after YouTube had changed what you were allowed to say on YouTube.
Yep. Yep. But you weren't allowed to say it when you said it, you see.
Correct. But we got hit saying it even on a new video we were getting hit with it.
What shouldn't there be like some sort of statute of limitations on this shit though, really? Like if there was any if they're gonna do their draconian shit, shouldn't they be like, you know, if a video's more than 4 years old or 5 years old, we're just gonna not worry about that at this point.
Let's just go with no oversight. I mean, if you don't like it, just hit the block button.
That would be the easiest thing to do.
We don't need content moderation.
But every place we don't have content moderation, no one goes to.
That is the problem.
I'm sitting here right now. We can say whatever the fuck we want on Rumble. There's two people.
Yeah. How did you get Rumble to stream on StreamYard?
You have to set it up individually. This is one of those where you have a big table full of people at a meeting and the two people don't talk about their own individual. I'll show you later.
Yeah. Okay. Great. I tried to do it, and I was like, well, that didn't work.
It's RMPP, so you have to set it up. Every stream has to be reset. But it's once you know how to do it, it's 30
I'll
seconds.
Do it. Yeah, it's kind of like Instagram's that way, if you stream to Instagram.
Yeah.
And then you have to also hit go, which is annoying.
Do you guys have Discords?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't ever do anything with it, but my people have one.
Yeah, your people are active on Discord.
Yeah, very.
I actually have a Discord on your Discord, Jack.
You have a Discord on my Discord.
I also have a Discord, but I have a Discord on your Discord.
We should have Discord with each other.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, I was talking to Alan Booker because, you know, people talk on Telegram, they talk on Signal.
Yeah.
And I'm telling him how to interact with people in my community, which is more Telegram than Signal. And I'm like, you know, like, do you do Signal? Because my Signal doesn't actually notify me because I just can't. I can't be on everything.
Yeah, agreed.
And he's like, if I want to interact with people, I have to go where they are. And this group is on Signal, and that group is on Permies, and that group is on whatever. And so I just have it all, Nicole. I just don't look at it all the time. He goes through and, like you do with your clump and answer email approach, he does that with his notifications.
So. I got you. I don't know how that dude gets all the shit done. He gets done.
Yeah.
Like, he's really good at building teams, though, and I don't like people, so that's part of the difference.
Now you know how that dude gets shit done.
But you see, the problem isn't the people. It's getting the people to the point of competency where they actually are a help rather than a hindrance. That's the part I'm not good at. Like, if you show up capable, we're good. But, like, if I have to, like, hold your hand, and after, like, 2 weeks I'm explaining the same thing to you again, you're fired.
You're just not going to make it.
You're just not going to make it.
I mean, that's
I'm like John. John's interview is, here's a sewing machine, here's some shit, make that.
Or it used to be here's some thread the sewing machine.
Okay.
But they couldn't thread the sewing machine.
Yeah, you're not gonna make it.
We didn't know factories had a sewing thread guy that would change needles and thread every morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think that dude exists anymore. Like janitors. Yeah.
That's like somebody who types your transcription up. They're gone.
Yep.
Well, we used to have those typing pools, right? All these women sitting down just typing, and they were doing, like, triplicate with carbon paper and shit. I actually learned how to do that in high school. Like, in one of our classes, we had to learn how to do carbon paper with a typewriter. And as we were doing it, the teacher's going, I really, sorry, I have to make you guys do this. I don't have a choice. In another 5 years, none of you are ever going to see a typewriter again. And, man, she was right.
Yep. You're not always going to have a calculator.
Yeah, I have.
Jack, if you want to see a typewriter, I'm pretty sure you could go to Special Operations Equipment in Camden, Tennessee, and I bet there's a typewriter there somewhere.
That's not documented, though. I've seen them,
but I
do remember my grandfather doing all his correspondence on one of the old school freaking, not even the electric, the freaking hammers like John has.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember.
Well, those are fun because you can get them like all caught up in each other if you go too fast.
That's what I used to do. Like he'd be there. He typed like 80 words a minute on one of those fucking things. And I get down there and try to pretend. I'm like 6 years old trying to pretend. I'm just slamming everything, and they would all.
They say that's why the keyboard's spread out like it is, so that you are slower jamming that machine up.
Ah.
Yep. Okay, guys, in the live stream, if there's something you want to hear us talk about, please put the word question in all caps and tell us what you want to hear about. Otherwise, we're going to end up freestyling today, as we always do. But I just wanted to let you know, I'd also be very happy to take your questions. Hey, Edward Scissorhands is in the audience. John, tell us about Edward Scissorhands.
I don't know what we're even talking about.
Tim Riley is Edward Scissorhands.
Got it. Yeah. All our trees look awesome because Tim.
Yeah, I walked up, I guess I drove up a few weeks ago, and it looked like Edward Scissorhands had been through the orchard because he hadn't gotten through to get branches out yet. So that's now how I think of Tim.
Got it. Yeah. The trees are super heavy. I knocked 50% of the peaches off, probably still need to pull more. They were almost touching the ground. We're doing hops. Carrie Brown's coming in with a bunch of hops. We're putting up vertical power poles, phone poles, 30-foot poles, wire cable, and then doing 60 feet of hops planted every 30 feet. So everybody will be here for that. Not this Wednesday, next Wednesday, we'll film that whole thing.
So what are you doing with the hops? Just having them?
Everybody's like, oh, you're doing beer? I'm like, no, they have medicinal purposes. I don't know. Carrie Brown's like, I have hops. So that's a good opportunity to have Carrie Brown out. So I'm like, yes, we'll do some hops. Tim's been talking to him. He's like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. I said, sounds perfect.
Yeah, I've seen Carrie's hop farm, and I think he and his brother make a pretty good side income on that every year. Nice. Like, they just sell them. So
we're just going to have a lot.
So if you are wanting to quit beer and wanting a beer-like flavor, you can brew hops tea. It's not the same, but it is. It's an ancillary thing you can do.
You can do that. It's also, I just put a thing, hop pillows. It's actually a thing like on Etsy and stuff like that. Hops are a sleep aid, and they are a mental stimulant, especially when it's just the aroma of them. So, like, hop pillows, like, so our soldiers can sleep well at night with a holster in them, John. There you go.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, they have a ton of medicinal purposes.
Yeah, they do.
So we're expecting a new salve from Amanda that involves hops, then.
I'm sure she's working on a new one right now.
Yeah.
She can't make them fast enough.
Well, she's ready to have her own team, except for maybe she's not. How's your garden looking?
Good, because Kiri set it all up.
Yeah.
Yep, I built some raised beds this weekend that I can just move with the skid steer. So they'll be made out of 2x6s and 4x4s. I'm going to put pond liner in there so that it doesn't contact. We'll paint them all black before we assemble the rest of them. And I think we're going to build about 50 more of them. So we'll double the capacity of all the raised beds here.
Jack, how'd your gardens do with you being gone for 3 or 4 days?
They did fine. I'm just really behind this year. I have a lot of stuff I haven't planted yet. And the freaking chickens are on the verge of going in the crock pot. The big giant black chickens, like... I've had all these other chickens, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get the biggest, fattest, lazy. And they were never that big a problem. I'm going to get the biggest, fattest chickens possible. They're in there all the time. I went on chicken warfare last week, and I think they've decided that they don't like that place anymore. I'm literally, like, throwing fence slats at them and shit when they're out there up against the raised trellises and all. And they, like, as soon as you throw it, like, it's not even near them yet, and they start freaking out and hauling ass. I've become impressed with chicken reactionary time, actually, with this, but... I'm thinking about getting some of those motion sensor sprinklers.
Oh, yeah.
But I have a product idea if anybody wants to make one. Just don't use China because you'll pay 190% tariff or whatever on it right now. We should have motion sensor just alarms that just like start going apeshit and making noise. And I was like, there has to be – I could find anything like it.
Or with strobes.
Strobes, just flares. Jingle bells, I don't care, whatever, like, record your own voice, I'm gonna eat you fucking chickens, whatever, and then stick that out there, and I mean, that I think that would work, because they don't like loud, obnoxious noises.
Yeah,
they
the
do
water...
have motion sensors for when you drive in a driveway. I wonder if that can be wired to be loud.
So I bet they get used to it.
I just want, like, chicken deterrent 101, like, the chickenator. You stick it in the garden bed, because the problem with the sprinklers is, because of how I have my garden laid out with the four beds and, like, Victorian square to really cover it, I need like four of those freaking sprinklers, and that means you need to like manifold out 4 liter hoses, and it's just a mess, and I don't really want to do it, but I will if I have to.
I like the sprinkler idea to keep cats out of your raised beds.
Yeah, well, the other thing that they do have that's related to cats is it's a vibration sensor.
Yeah,
and it will start clapping and making loud noises because you put it on your kitchen counter. And
barbarian
cats to be disturbed. I don't know how that would work in a bed with a chicken, though.
The barbarian dad said he's going to get a link. Bro, you're going to have to email that to me. We can't let you. It's not up to us. If you try to post a link in chat, it won't show up for us. Only we can do it. Email me that shit. I want to know.
Yeah.
Jack at thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC in the subject line.
Exactly. Andrew asking about stain contaminating the soil. I'm staining the wood because I'm just using white wood, and I'm using a pond liner. So there won't be any contact to the soil, to the wood. And I'm doing that really to prolong the wood. I know guys are like, don't use creosote and railroad ties. Dude, everything I ate growing up was grown in creosote railroad ties. And I'm sure there's less toxin then. And then with your wood, you hear all these people talking about pressure treated lumber. Pressure treated lumber doesn't work anymore because they took all the chemical stuff out of it. There's still some stuff, but not like what used to be.
It used to be CCA and they took the A out.
I'm breathing way more toxins every day than I'm ever going to add in through, you know, garden soil like
that. Here's how you know if a toxic thing is really a problem. If they don't get rid of it, it's really a problem. If they do get rid of it, it was never a problem. That's how you know. Like, the things that they absolutely say will not hurt you and they won't get rid of it, that's probably the things that will hurt you. because I went a deep dive on the CCA stuff back 25 years ago. And there's just not enough. Like, if all of it came out and all of it went into one place and you planted one plant on top of it, it's still not enough to actually do anything to you.
Plus, the power poles you're getting and the rail ties, they've already removed those. Like, you and I aren't buying new rail ties.
No, that stuff's leached way out by
the time. Yeah, we're getting pull out. Same with, like, you see people all over Africa and stuff growing in rubber tires.
Yeah.
And then you've got the tire police show up in all the raised bed gardens over that. Man, you're getting more poison out of your city water and taking a shower than you are out of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a couple questions here. One's for me. How are tariffs affecting coffee beans? So is it all okay? Because coffee beans don't come from China, as a matter of fact. So that's a big thing. The thing that's affecting coffee prices is more crop failure. And then a couple of coffee shipments haven't been allowed to come into port from time to time this year. And so there's a little bit of insecurity about if it's even going to be allowed in, which has caused the spot price of coffee to go up. But right now it's going down. And I can tell you that when I order coffee, I'm ordering coffee this week. And she said, these are the prices, but the prices are not the prices until you actually pay. Mm. And that's it. And then she's, you know, the one coffee that I usually get, they don't have because it's on order. The order is confirmed and it's not on water. So they're only letting us buy what's on water. Because it's more about disruptions at the ports than tariffs in our world at this time. But we went up 40% in January.
That's how buying steel is. It's never the price. There's not a set. It fluctuates daily.
Yeah. When I was in telco, it was the same thing because it's all the cables copper.
Price
per foot on the data cabling, and it's like, you want to put a PO now? Because I can't tell you it's going to be the same price next week. But we had built, like, averaging software into our system so that we knew, like, it's going to be in here, and then we would just go to the high side of the price and we bid to the customer, because I'm not putting a PO until the customer comes back. I mean,
yep.
Somebody said Starbucks started buying beans from China in 2017. Sucks to be them. I'm buying direct from farms.
Whoopsie.
They come from all over the world, different countries.
Whoopsie. Yeah.
A lot of it comes from Myanmar.
You should get it from Juan Valdez.
It comes from Africa, too.
Okay, so Andrew says, question, only dirt on the raised beds, or will you layer, example, wood on the bottom, et cetera, John?
So I put rock inside them. I put firewood inside because soil is expensive, and filling 50 raised beds, it just depends what we're planting in there. Now, I've got firewood that has been inside of potting soil and growing medium and stuff for 6-7 years. And when you uncover that wood is not broken down at all. I mean, none. Like, we took it right out, cut trees down, split it, dried it. I took it right out of the firewood pile, and that stuff does not degrade. So I just use it as volume. Now, building these beds, I'm building a lot of these beds shallower. They will not be 12 or, 3 feet deep like when they're on the ground. These are all standing, so we can just put forks under them.
Yeah, I'm with John. Phil's expensive, and I get a lot of wood chips. If I'm doing a 2 foot deep bed, which is what I have to do here, I'm 11, 12 inches of wood chips, and then I'm Phil, because I mean, that it costs more for the fill than it costs to build the bed.
Way more. I went out with the skid steer in the forest next door and took like 10 full bucket loads of forest soil, brought it in, and then we sifted through it to get all the root matter out and put that into these. I've got these big aluminum raised beds. And filled those up, and those suckers grow all kinds of weeds and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Even though it was in the forest getting no sunlight, boy, everything is growing in there except the stuff I want growing in there.
Yeah.
For my Vivor beds, which are the extra deep ones, so that I can reach them, I did a layer of logs on the bottom, but not under any of the cross supports. So we packed clay up under there.
Yeah.
And then anything that was being composted from anywhere, eggshells, coffee grounds, food from the kitchen. And then the last about 8 inches is soil that we've made here. And that's worked great.
Well, your first year, you got a 5 bricks out of your broccoli.
I did.
On a bed that was, 6 months old? That's pretty
impressive.
It wasn't
even 6 months old. That was about 3 months old.
That's impressive.
I use concrete, too. Like, I'll see just dumped concrete. we brought that in for the goats so that they would kind of wear their hooves down on it. And then we've taken a bunch of those chunks of concrete and put them in those beds. Now they need to go in beds. You're not going to be moving around, obviously, but we've used that for fill too. And that's worked well. Just anything to take that volume up and raise that thing up.
So comparing what I did using bags of soil, my vegetables are way happier, but I mixed biochar in and did a lot of compost tea and compost from the compost pile. But yeah, Jack said I measured a 5 on the brick scale for that particular bed. And it was, you know, one that I had with garden soil was a 3, like soil from a bag that had been in pots. So
yeah.
When we bring in, like, I'll buy whatever soil I can get at the store on clearance. And a lot of times that's generic Miracle-Gro or Miracle-Gro. And for a guy starting out, like, you want somebody to start gardening that's going to continue gardening, you set their stuff up with Miracle-Gro. Yes, it's urea. Yes, we know it's the devil. But that first time he grows a garden or she grows a garden, that shit's going to actually grow. Ken always has great stuff. And if you're in a position where you're going to fill a ton of beds, you can get super sacks where a semi-truck pulls up and you get those big, like you see them out front when you buy sand or grout for doing masonry work at Home Depot. You can get those. They're like 3x3x3 or 4x4x4, and you can get all that stuff that way and save a ton of money.
Question, do you prepare the wood for your garden beds by soaking or inoculating it of any kind?
I haven't. I just use it for volume.
I mean, wood chips are kind of pre-inoculated with fungal growth anyway, usually, if they're breaking down.
I will often hit them with mushroom spawn, basically, but from spent spawn, just to increase the fungal kick.
I've had, we've got a huge pile. I don't know, it's probably 60 feet by 30 feet, and it usually sits about 4 feet tall, of just wood chips that have been out there for anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. And you want to watch that stuff, because when you pick it up, it'll be full of ants. Ants love, if you've had that sitting there static for any length of time. We filled a whole greenhouse with it, and it was really nice when we put it in the greenhouse over the winter. It was so hot, and it just made all kinds of moisture. But ants moved into that, and we had tons of fire ants. It was just a perfect medium for them.
They need murder juice, John.
Yeah, murder a lot juice. Of it.
Murder juice is an ounce of orange oil per gallon of water.
We've never fully knocked them out. I've bought the orange oil off Amazon, mixed it with the boiling water, and it knocks them down, but it's never fully removed.
Make sure you're not buying the stuff that's pre-diluted. That happened here when you're in Nicole's it's not working. It's like, and I finally looked at the bottle. I'm like, oh, because I thought Nicole was crazy. And I'm like,
yeah,
no,
it'll melt. It'll
crazy.
Melt them. Yeah, it melts their skeletons.
And you don't need to use boiling water either. It's actually better if you don't. Because then they don't try to infiltrate away. Because what you're trying to do is melt the queens. If you melt the queens, the whole thing collapses. It's worked everywhere here except one spot. I've got a place under my shop, and there's just like giant piece of stone, and the fucking queens must have a chamber under that stone, so I just can't soak it enough to get rid of her. Everywhere else, I've knocked the shit out of them with that stuff.
I've been seeing a ton of stuff on shorts where guys are using baking soda or baking powder and mixing it 50-50 with sugar. They come after the sugar, and then when they eat the baking soda, they are supposed to explode their stomachs or something.
I don't know if I believe it or not, but
I don't know, guys.
It works, right? Like, I've just heard so many things like that. I'll tell you what does work. The Amdro bait, which I don't like to use, but when they get in my raised beds, because it's so contained, not my raised beds, my wicking beds, I don't want to pour like a gallon of orange oil and a few shit in there and knock the plants back for a while. So you take like a soda, like a plastic soda bottle, and you put a couple pinches of the Amdro bait, not the powder shit, the stuff that's like little pellets, and set it in there on its side. And about the only thing that will go in there to get that out is an ant. And what they do is they take it and then they feed it to the queen. And when she goes tits up, everybody goes tits up.
I'm going to do that. I have a raised bed that it has a persistent fire ant hill.
Yeah.
That I have orange oiled about 1,000 times. Or
just don't put it like right, you would think like right next to the bed, like give them about a couple foot.
Yeah.
For some reason they want to go out and get stuff or something. But once one ant brings one in, it's like, hey, they give little ant communications and shit. And then the line starts 2x2 and then everybody's dead.
I've got 3,000 gallons in the aquaponic system, right about that. And my water is super green, right? Because it's just tanks. We never covered it or painted the IBCs. So every year I use a sump pump and pump all that out and then put fresh water in, filtered fresh water. And then as soon as I energize the system and start the pumps, it all turns green again. What should I be putting in there? I know the answer is more plants to eat more nutrients, but is there a way to ungreen that stuff?
Barley straw.
I've tried the little floating ones, but it doesn't work.
How big? I mean, how many gallons is the whole system? You probably need one of the ones that's like about like that. And you might need two, and it might take a while. What they do is it shuts down the replication capabilities of the algae. So they can't reproduce. So it takes a while. The other thing you could use is you could use an algicide, but all the algae, like I could send you a product offline, but if you have any invertebrates, like snails or whatever, it will just fuck them up. But it won't hurt your fish.
Got it. Yeah, because it's in the water. The water's just green.
Yeah, you've got like a suspended algae, and like I've had systems do that for years and years and years, and then one day they go clear, and it never happens again.
I thought about putting a big canister filter or something on there.
Yeah. It's very hard to filter out because there's such fine particles of algae. It's actually really healthy for the system, though.
I was wondering if labs with lactobacillus would help with that at all.
It might. And what's in there? Koi?
Yeah, butterfly koi.
Yeah, you could do a lactic acid, like basically cheese, and feed the curds and everything to them.
Really?
They'll eat
the crap out of
that's
that.
That's a Stephen Reisner hack, yeah.
I started doing that with not all my whey, but I use whey in the system. And then if I have extra cheese that I left out too long from the batch, I throw it in. They eat that. They love it.
Yeah, I'm adding whey to my compost bioreactors now, but at the like very end.
Yeah.
Like toward the very, very end. I'll just dump some in there. It can't
Full confession, I didn't get the wood chip cap on my bioreactor till today. So I watered the crap out of it, and then I put it on.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a totally different climate type, though. When I checked your old reactor, I expected it to be not good, and it was fine.
Yeah, we get a lot of rain.
You stay wet, and you stay humid. We don't stay humid. Like, if you don't stay on it here, like right now, it's freaking dark outside. That's how much rain we're getting. I mean, it looks like it's 9 o'clock. But once we get out of our rainy season, you know what it's like. It's brown.
Yeah. Well, we may get some drought. Like, I haven't even bought or set up the sprinkler for it yet because we had 2 inches of rain over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that'll be good for a bit.
We had 2 inches of rain yesterday. And we are having 2 inches of rain now.
Like, yeah, our mutual friend told me that it was raining all day yesterday unexpectedly.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I'm hoping I don't get knocked out of this, but at least it won't just, there's two others to carry the weight. We had a brief outage yesterday, like 10 minutes before I went live.
Of course.
It came back.
You and I overlapped lives yesterday.
Ah.
I was like, Jack's starting later. We're going to overlap lives. And that does mean I get an influx right after you end. So question, would you be scared of wood chips from your local city recycle pile in the garden, planter boxes, et cetera? They have a continuous tree and scrap pile, supposedly no lumber chips.
I wouldn't, and the reason is it's probably all, like, city prunings, like, where they're pruning off the power lines and shit. So, like, even your neighbors that, you know, might be doing true green chem lawn crap and all, like, the amount of that's actually going to precipitate up into the tree is very minimal. I have never been afraid of wood chips from anybody, honestly. I mean, if somebody was breaking down, you knew they were breaking down pallets that were used on some kind of oil concern or something, maybe. But other than that, I wouldn't worry about it. Just use it.
We had the city dumping their chipper trucks here 2 and 4 a day. We have 1,000 dump loads of chipper trucks.
Yeah.
That's what we built all this soil on. When we bought the property, it was a gravel pit.
Uh-huh.
And now we've got that 20 inches of soil at the top that looks like black potting soil. That's just rotted trees. That's what they kept. We dumped them. We just dump, and we would just spread them out with a skid steer over years.
So I actually had a segment yesterday, and you got to be careful when you're doing this. This dude had the tree trimmers or whatever dropping off wood chips his neighbor did on his back fence. So he goes out, and it's not steaming. It's smoking.
Yeah, it'll catch on fire.
Right.
Yeah.
So they had to call the fire department in, and they watered it down. Well, of course, that
hit
the compost, and it smoked more. And the simple solution is, those piles make them more like windrows and keep them 3 foot high or lower. This dude had 6 foot high and it's a Ramiel chip, so it's got green and brown in it. And that much pressure and that much heat, and your center's wet and your top is dried out. Yeah. You could, like, somebody during that stream said the mayor of his city owns a wood chip mulch business somewhere in New Jersey and almost set the whole fucking county on fire with their yard. Like, so be careful with it.
That stuff gets hot, guys. It gets hot. Okay. Barbarian Dad says, John or Nicole, did you ever lose sheep to pregnancy toxemia? Have you dealt with this? I switched from block minerals to loose, but free choice individual minerals are hard to find.
I have not had anything like that happen.
I hate to say that because that's usually when something like that happens to me. Yeah. But Premier Fencing has a line of sheep minerals that are free choice one at a time. We have not lost any to pregnancy toxemia here. We try to keep their condition as good as possible, but I did have to pull one this year. So, but so far, none of that. I don't know how you're raising your sheep. We also rotate ours every 3 to 7 days on pasture, and we have a lot of pasture available. Like, we have way more grass than sheep, which is helpful. So you're not like getting into the I'm feeding them grain situation to keep them alive here.
I give a pitcher of sweet feed every morning, broken into 3 bowls. I've got 8 sheep right now. I have not given minerals in 2 years, probably. I just completely forgot, really. Doc Barry, when we got our sheep from him, he said, I think we bought Purina. I've got a bag of Purina sheep minerals. It's just a granular powder, like salt granules almost. It's not a block or anything, but my sheep haven't had any supplementation or anything since we've put them in the back at all.
If your pasture is good, you may not need it. Question, will lacto-fermenting vegetables add microbes into the soil? I guess if you put the vegetables in the soil. But I think Stephen Reisner's way of catching IMO is a faster way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, basically, if you want to do this for your soil, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to throw the basically the brine, but it's very salty, right? That's a problem. The kashi is what you want, right? So you take all of your compostables that don't go to normal compost and do a kashi bucket. That's going to get you that lactobacillus infusion that you're looking for. Or like you said, you can do an IMO, but IMO is, I have found it to be a hell of a lot more work than all the guys that do it say it is. Right. Like, that's why I like the way I compost. Cause what we're doing with a bioreactor compost is a giant, like 2 yard freaking thing of IMO in just one step, build it and keep it wet. And then when you're done, that's what you have. But what they do is really cool. It's just like every time I watch them do it, like, so now we made IMO one. So we're done, right? Oh no. And then IMO two. And next thing you know, they're like making this giant fucking pile and it has to be under like cover. Compost, bro.
Yep. I use my whey. When I make cheese, I just use the whey. And that is
on your garden.
That's lactobacillus. Yeah. On the garden, I spray my fruit trees with it. I spray my tomatoes with it. I dilute it for that. But last year I got fire blight in the orchard.
Yeah.
And I was on the road so much, I didn't notice till I noticed.
Yeah.
And so I happened to have cheese I needed to make, and I made the cheese and I took the whey and I diluted it and sprayed them while also before I even cut out the blight, so that that would already be there counteracting it. Cause I mean, I had no idea how much those beneficial bacteria help you with the disease until Alan was saying, like, make milk kefir in your house if you have a black mold problem. Mm. Get the good bacteria to make it uncomfortable for the bad ones.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's damn solid. I don't know what I was going to say now. I'm obsessed with this thing I'm sending over to myself. The Barbarian Dad just sent me this thing. It's like a motion sensor that sounds like a barking dog and gunshots. 130 decibels, 13 kinds of sound, strobe light with USB. Say goodbye to the intruders.
All right,
chickens, y'all are fucked.
All workshop 2025. Just be aware.
Yeah. Just for everybody that's listening in from my side anyway that comes to our workshops, if you haven't heard yet, we're moving our venue. We're working with a YMCA camp that is 15 minutes from my house, so it will be no It's literally the same distance from the airport if you're flying in, exactly the same amount of time. But we just went out again this week and did some stuff with them. I got some footage of some things. We'll be putting out some collateral. It's going to be really cool. But we have 320 acres for you to camp on. But actually, you have like 2 acres to camp on because we're paying for an area for you guys. But it's going to be freaking badass. Nicole saw it. It's kind of a little bit more work for us because we have to move things from the property, from our property there and back. But for, I think the students are going to be a lot more comfortable, more space, more room, you know, bigger presentation area. Plus, you know who should come? You know who should come, Nicole? Who should John come Willis. To a workshop here? Who's never been to one?
John Willis. He's like, I'm never going to do it. All you have to do is show up, John, and we'll make space for you.
It's not showing up. It's leaving here.
If you can't leave your business owns you.
It does own me.
Oh. You know what you should read? A book on how to change that.
Yeah.
It's called Laws of Life, and it's coming out on Monday.
Yeah. When I leave here, we get a third the production, and it takes 3 times. For every day I'm out, it takes 3 to catch up. Unfortunately, that's what it is.
Have you tried killing somebody who's responsible for that yet?
Yeah.
You fired him, I'm sure.
I find leaving a body hanging from a rafter is a strong message.
I'm with you out on the pipes at the end of the driveway.
But you get in trouble for that, so what you do is you do it by their feet, and you only leave them there for like 20 minutes, and you let them down. That's
Adam, John's really good at critical feedback that leaves no question what he means, delivered in a way that does not sound angry.
Who is?
John Willis.
Oh, okay.
I think it probably sounds angry to the people it's being addressed to.
I mean, you've given me some. It didn't sound angry.
But it's more like when it's finally to the point of removing the person, it's done in front of everybody. So everybody knows exactly what happened.
Mm.
Yep.
There's never a question about it. Like for me to tell people what happened after the fact, we just do it when everybody's present. So there's no question of whether the story's been changed or he said, she said. It just happens with everybody present.
I know I'm not good at it because I've literally gone out of my way to be as soft-toned as possible and make the person I'm counseling comfortable and censor my own words and explain to them I'm just looking and still had people like grown-ass fucking adults cry. And I don't know what it is. I don't get it.
Well, okay, Jack, if you don't like what the person's telling you and it makes you face an unfortunate reality, it does. I mean, that hurts.
Yeah.
Like the reason critical feedback can hurt is they're right. And then you're like, I'm going to have to change a thing or whatever. What John does is he just says it. This is my thing in a tone of voice that's not angry. It's not encouraging. It's not, and here's a shit sandwich, like positive, negative, positive. He just said, this is the way it is.
I mean, I guess the majority of people I had to do this with were salespeople that were not making their quota. And like, so you're 30 days away from losing your job by the time you have that conversation, right? So that might be part of it. The other part of it, like people know that I'm rough. And then I guess maybe me trying to be nice made it worse. You know what I mean? Okay. Maybe like, man, he's being really chill and he's really trying to help me and all. I must have really fucked up. I don't know. But I'm like, but it happens all the time. Like I'll correct one of the kids that's in there crying and I'm like, what did I say? And Dorothy's like, you just don't know what you sound like. I'm like, really? I thought it was like, honey, you can't do that anymore. That's what I thought I said.
Adam Rapier, we use Webstaurant a lot, especially if I'm ordering, like our chamber vacuum sealer came from Webstaurant. I've got a chest freezer that's probably 8 feet long, like a commercial one that came from Webstaurant. They will have next day delivery where a semi truck pulls up. Obviously it's very costly, but if you need something the next day, we've ordered a lot of different Mylar bags from them. We've ordered packaging and stuff. Josh chefed here for 4 years. We ordered a ton of stuff from Webstaurant.
So if you order their not name brand stuff, it is possible if a part breaks, you will not be able to repair the thing. That's so the cheaper things on there. Just be aware of that when you're buying it. Sometimes it's like, well, it's so much less. I might as well just buy a new one if it breaks. And sometimes you can repair it. It just depends. Tim says, does sourdough starter do the same thing as whey is doing in the bioreactor? And the answer is that's yeast and not lactobacillus. So it's a different bacteria set. And I don't know what happens when you introduce yeast into your... I'm sure there's some there. But I mean, it's not doing the same thing as labs.
The thing is, the yeast absolutely need a simplistic sugar to do anything.
Yes, right? Then it does so, nothing.
You know, they're not. But the thing with a sourdough starter is you have a yeast and a lactobacillus combination in there. So the bacteria may take off, but yeast, if yeast doesn't have an easy to break down simple sugar, it doesn't do anything. It dies. Well, it goes dormant where it dies.
Until you add sugar.
Until you add sugar. And then it makes alcohol. So
your plants get drunk.
Well, no, plants die if it makes large amounts. Now, Matt Powers was talking about this at the last workshop that I had him at, that a little bit of that's good, but a lot of it, like a significant amount of it's bad. So if you were to do something like infuse yeast with like a cup of sugar, you're going to make a fairly, you know, if that wasn't a gallon, you're going to make something in a neighborhood of 7% alcohol. That's probably not great for your plants.
Okay, question from Lily Farms Food. Is it a bad idea to put tilapia in my pond for algae control, 6 surface acres in the foothills of North Carolina?
They won't do anything with the algae. They are a plant eater, not an algae eater. And they're also going to die. That's the good thing about it, unless you have some special little pocket. Down here in Texas and in Arkansas, a lot of the fisheries decided, hey, I got this great idea. Tilapia breed like crazy. We'll put in tons of tilapia in these lakes, and they'll grow really fast, and then they'll control the weeds, and then the bass will eat them, and the stripers will eat them, and the white bass will eat them, and then the ones that they don't get, they'll die in the winter. Huh. Except they put them in a couple of lakes that had power plant generation on them, and the power plant generation discharges warm water, so all the tilapia in the winter, they just like all cruise over there. And we have lakes now that are like all the tilapia, the red ones, the pink ones, the white ones, the blue ones, and they're like dinner plate size. Fortunately, they're smaller lakes, like 600-ish acre lakes. And so if you have a place where they might winter over, they could become a problem if you consider them a problem. And your problem, they will not control algae. They're not an algae eater. They're a vegetation eater. I wouldn't do it, but I wouldn't fault you if you did. They'll probably die.
We've got that happening with Asian carp here. There's actually a bounty on it.
Carp can live in freezing water. I mean, like right down until they're an ice cube. The tilapia, what I would say is if you're going to do it, don't do White Niles. They're the most cold tolerant. I had to make it here till the water hit 37 degrees. And at 30, it says 55. Yeah, they don't read books. And at 38 degrees, they were just barely moving. At 37 degrees, they all just fell on their side. And I netted them up. And there's a whole YouTube playlist on my, there was like a winter aquaponics or something. I threw them in a 300-gallon Rubbermaid, and they all came back. I mean, they all just like kind of like righted within like a couple of minutes. And then in 10 minutes, they were swimming around.
I want to know who just had the most amazing thunderbolt. Which one?
Wasn't me.
It was me.
Oh, yeah. That was loud.
Yeah, it was. I hope my safe internet stays together. I need to get Skylink as whatever the fuck it is, Starlink, as at least a backup. Like, do you have the travel one, John, or do you have like the?
We have the RV one, but we have it permanently mounted.
See, that's what I was thinking about doing, because it's cheaper.
Yep.
And I only want it as a backup.
And when we ordered it, they shipped it the same day or next day, where the other one is going to take weeks.
I'm going to do that because it would just be good to have. Like yesterday, I was like, the power went out for like 10 minutes, came back on. I'm 10 minutes from going out, and the modem just won't sync.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can tether my phone, but it's LTE, and it's just, you know, not that
Evan,
great.
Evan from Radio Made Easy, he's got the little travel one, and he swears by that thing. That seems to be the deal now.
Because I think what it is you get less data, but if I'm using it a backup, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, to replace, it would actually cost more than Spectrum cost me to have the regular one, and when this doesn't happen, it's fucking beautiful.
Yeah. My backup requires me to run next door to my neighbor's house, which is not ideal.
No.
I'll be like, I'll be back, guys. That happened to us once. You guys kept going, and I was like, I'm back. It took me 5 minutes to walk over here.
Our Starlink really throttles back in storm and rain, but it worked. Radio Made Easy said there's a $10 a month plan now.
That's what we want. Like, I just want it. I understand, like, you get not much data, but I'm not going to use it once or twice a month.
Yeah.
And if it does travel, when I travel, it could go.
Correct.
I like that.
Mississippi grass shrimp for algae control. Chad was here yesterday and he said put crawfish in there. He had like blue lobsters or something.
Yeah. That
really ate the sediment on the bottom.
But none of these things, like everybody thinks they eat algae. None of these things actually eat algae. Like, they might help with your water clarity, but they don't eat algae. Like, the best thing you could do is buy like three or four of the larger barley straw, throw that in there. It'll probably work.
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
Or like I said, email me and so I don't forget. And I got an algae side you can use as long as you're not, if you have crayfish in there or shrimp or anything, it will fuck them up.
Yeah. I got nothing in there, but just butterfly koi.
Oh, that'll be fine. It'll work quick too.
Really and those things that like you were talking about with the other carp, those butterfly koi freeze up every year.
Yeah, and they come back.
And then when the water defrosts, I'm like, I guess we lost them. And then within a couple of weeks, they just show back up.
I had it freeze one year where, it, just because of the way it froze, I had like 4 inches of ice, but it was dead clear so you could see through.
Yeah.
And they were down in the bottom of these tubs, and they were just sitting there. Like, and they were all lined up side by side like sheep laying down in a pasture. And they were just sitting there like, no, I guess we're not doing anything for a while. Which is great because they don't produce any waste, so you can turn all your pumps and shit off.
Yeah. Yeah, we turn everything. Ours is above ground. Well, you've seen it. Above ground system.
Yeah.
7 IBC totes. And they freeze up. Like, they freeze up so much, you can put your arm down between the IBC tote and the block of ice.
Yep.
And we just turn the system off. What cracks, cracks.
Yeah.
And then we just fix it as soon as we repressurize it.
Same.
I'm not seeing the $10 a month plan, Evan. That got my attention. I'm sure it's there, but it's well hidden.
They probably hide it. You have to be Evan to know where it is.
That's why I told him, so hopefully maybe Evan could let me know in the future. Okay, Hardway Alaska says, making an off-grid shower, sinking a 55-gallon barrel to filter and pressure tank inside the cabin. How do I keep the barrel slime-free? Filter the water before it goes in the barrel?
Yeah.
Copper. Put a chunk of copper in there.
I mean, the only way a barrel that's buried gets slime would be that slime was in the water before it went in, because if it's buried, it's not getting exposed to light.
Did he say buried? So you're going to run a pump to get it into the shower, I guess? You're going to have to use electricity?
Oh, inside the cabin.
Yeah, I was saying something again. Don't bury a barrel, because as soon as it's empty, it will collapse.
Yeah, that's true.
Dump a bottle of hydrogen peroxide in it once every 2 weeks. It's like 69 cents.
That'll work.
You're done. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
And then light is your enemy. Right.
Yeah. So keep the light away.
That's why I've got the problem we have. If we just took pallet and built a pallet wall around that thing, it would cut that drastically, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And everybody told me before we did it, they're like, paint those tanks black. I think you told me, Jack.
Yeah. Sure. That sounds like something I would say. You know, you could do, like, now that you have to retrofit it, you know that shit that people put in, like, houses, like, maybe not even houses, like out on porches to kind of make it look tiki hut. It's like bamboo.
Oh, yeah. It just rolls like, out. Yeah.
Just roll that all the way around it as a facade. And they're like pretty cheap.
Like those bamboo yoga mat looking things.
Yeah, those are those. And then, like, when it, you know, lasts a few years, and then just compost it and put another one in. If it doesn't work, you're out $100.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because if you do it with lumber or something, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah, we've got hundreds of pallets here.
Yeah, you know the problem with pallets is you have to take them apart.
Yes. Yeah, so anybody who wants to do pallet wall stuff, you can order deconstructed pallets from Home Depot.
Oh, and wow.
If you order like 20 of them, they'll ship them on a semi-truck, so they'll just liftgate them down. But if you look up pallet on Marketplace, you will find all these sawmills building pallets, and they will sell you the pieces before they have put the pallets together.
Oh, so that's nice.
So if you want that stuff, and they're usually multi-different woods, different grains, and when you stain them and torch them or torch them and stain them or vice versa combination, you get a great appearance to them. It really brings that grain out. You just use a weed torch.
Yeah.
It just torches them so nice.
No, that's what makes them cool is all the different woods and textures. And it, I don't know, it's got character. I've thought about taking, it would just be so much work, like doing the whole inside of my shop in that wood. I think it would look fucking awesome.
Yeah, we've done a couple of stairwell walls and stuff with them.
Evan says you get the Rome 10 plan after you buy the Rome 50 and activate it.
Yeah.
And then it's cacked. capped out at 10 gigabytes.
But see, that would be all I would need. I mean, I'm, like I said, one, yeah. like just backup. And like charge me for overage. I don't give a shit. Like when I'm sitting here and can't do a show, like I'm going to lose way more than another 10 bucks by not doing that show.
We walk out. We've got cable. We've got two cable networks going into the building with multiple Wi-Fi. So as soon as you walk out the door, it's seamless because you've got about a 20-second buffer. So if you're watching a YouTube or listening to a YouTube video, you come out, you don't even see it glitch by the time it catches Starlink. And then when you walk in the building, it actually catches Starlink better coming out of the building than it catches the network going back into the building.
Carrie says, wrap those rubber mats around them, your tanks, John. You might have enough to do them all.
Oh, we definitely do. It just look uglier. I mean, it's not look uglier than it looks, I guess, with those IBC totes. She's right.
This is a good one, too. Scott just says, just take scrap cardboard and shove it between the frame and the
yep. frame. Yeah, that you get a work. Little insulation with that, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, next question. Annie says, do you think there is a soil contamination concern of degrading grow bags, and would biochar help to remediate this?
Biochar will help to remediate just about anything from a chemical standpoint. So the plastics in there is what you're concerned about, and they would have to begin to actually break down to the chemical level. So it's not going to, you know, like if it's something you could visually see, it's not going to do much for that. My advice would be don't use those kind of grow bags. I played with them for a while, and as I looked at the way they broke down, like I just really don't think they make a lot of sense. They are made with plastics. I mean, that's the primary thing they're made with. I think that there's probably a market out there for somebody to use recycled burlap. It will break down faster, but it's compost. And those grow bags don't last that long anyway.
Yeah, burlap lasts an awful long time because I use it. I'm using it in my orchard for mulch, basically.
Yeah.
So there's burlap and then pine straw on top of that, and it'll take probably 2 years for that to not be there anymore, doing what it needs to do.
And you get it with your coffee shipments, right? Because you're buying like giant bags.
Yeah, I got a bunch of them.
I remember as a kid, like burlap bags, we used them for everything. We used them to hang onions and garlic and we used to get them like everywhere that had any kind of shipping, you could get burlap bags. I don't really see them anymore. We even used them as minnow buckets. So you take a burlap bag, you roll it up, put it on the handlebars of your bike, you go fishing, throw a rock in it and a string, and you just throw it in the water with a noose so you could open it up. And we would catch like little bluegills and shit and throw them in there for bait. And then whatever you didn't use, dumped them out. They worked perfectly. But they just don't seem to be as available as they used to be.
And the burlap you see now is different than the burlap used to be, too. It has a heavy chemical smell to it. You see it because you can buy it in the craft section, like at Walmart and stuff.
Jack's getting thundered.
I'm muting my mic whenever I'm not talking because it's way worse than it is.
It's like there's literally a thundercloud right over the top of this house. Through weather engineering, thundering, so we can't hear what Jack says on this show, right?
As long as it doesn't strike the power pole, we're good.
Adam, we don't do belt resizing. We stopped all that during COVID. We can't build enough new belts. And the biggest frustration to the customer, as well as us, is where's my belt? Dudes were constantly wanting to send a belt back in with 10, 15 bucks to have it rebuilt. The true answer is we don't have somebody sitting here that goes through and processes them. It's so convoluted as to what you guys want. You write us a 4-paragraph letter, and half the time we still can't decipher it, and that requires an email. We stopped doing all that probably 5 years ago. We can't do them.
Yeah.
But you have belts for sale.
Yeah, but, I mean, we build 100 a day.
I know why people want to do it. Like when I lost all the weight, I had one of his and I wanted like 4 inches taken off. He's like, fuck it, hang it in your closet so you don't forget. I'll send you another one.
Yep. It's really easier to do that. And then we had tons of dudes that were buying used belts and want to send them in, just like Leatherman. Leatherman, if you brought a broken blade, like that's most of like when we look them up, most of the dudes doing it are trying to save $5 on something rather than.
No, fuck that.
And it takes so much physical labor on our end, we don't do them anymore.
It's easier to make another belt.
It's like it would take more time to do that than make the belt to begin with.
Yeah. Kevin, horse stall mats are super heavy if you've never moved them. They actually make a thing, they're like $30 out of these clamps to grab the edge to drag them around, well worth having. But no, Kiri's talking about ISO mats, like foam roll military matting. like they used to use for bed rolls.
Okay, I ordered any tips on composting in the desert?
Moisture.
Use shade and keep it wet.
I ordered Azolla yesterday also to pop into some of those tanks, and I need to add some water hyacinth to pull some of that nutrient.
Well, the Azolla will help a lot because it will shade the light coming in the top. Like, once that stuff gets thick, it gets like 2 inches thick. And by the way, if you want it to keep growing, start harvesting it, feeding it to your animals, because once it gets a certain thickness, it'll just sit there and stop.
Got it. That's what it's kind of like duckweed too, right? Duckweed covers the surface. The water hyacinth didn't do great last year, but the last couple of years before that, I was pulling, I don't know, 20 gallons out of that thing every week or so. And we would just put it up there, and the chickens would root through it, and the sheep would eat it.
I mean, the thing with the water hyacinth, so it likes sun, and you're kind of shaded where your system is. The Azolla in your climate loves that dappled shade. Like, right now, I've got it in one tank, you know, it's this thick, and then one tank over where it gets more sun, it's turning that reddish brown color when it starts to die. And it's the same, they're plumbed together, so it's the same system. It's just a solar exposure.
And for guys that don't know, people that don't know, you can order that stuff right off Amazon. A lot of that stuff, we get it from a place called Atlanta Goldfish.
Yep.
And it comes right off Amazon. And that's where all of our fish have come from. They've got crawfish, snails, everything, all the plants.
My issue with Azolla is that goldfish eat it.
Is that bad?
It's not bad. It's just that you can't establish it.
I guess. I had the poopiest situation when the goldfish discovered Azolla, and I was like, okay, so you don't grow the Azolla with the goldfish. You feed it through the goldfish.
Got it.
Yeah, I have tanks that have koi and goldfish in it, and I'll throw a handful in there, and in 2 days it's gone, which is good, but then they're eating small amounts at a time versus, like, because they'll gorge themselves.
Yeah, they will, and then they just poop.
So a goldfish has a very rapid digestion. So if there's endless food, it's an endless loop of shit.
Yes, it is. Which the plants like.
Plants like it.
Yeah. Hey, have you ever heard of the father fish method of aquarium?
I saw that.
I like that dude. He's really cool. He's an older guy. I found him about 2 years ago. He does all natural tanks, and it's beautiful. I'm probably getting out of the fish tank business, though. I had a third tank since I started doing this start leaking and I'm just about fucking done with it. So I'm right now getting Dorothy's office spiffed up enough with space so I can move all my shit to produce into there so I can gut this room and redo the flooring because the floor is fucked.
Shit.
Yeah. And so I'm going to take the tanks and move them out into the shop, and I'm probably going to do, like a reptile thing out there with all natives. So when it gets cold in winter, they just have to fucking go in the dirt and shut the fuck up until spring.
We have we got a reptile show this weekend in Nashville here, and it's reptiles and plants, which I've not seen before. So it looks pretty cool. They're social media. We're going to go check it out.
I have this thing I want to do because we get the biggest rat snakes I've ever seen when I have to pull them out of my coop because they're eating duck eggs. And I want to get like a big one this year, throw his ass in a 55 and just start feeding him a duck egg a day if he'll eat it. And just like, how big can we make a rat snake? Because I've seen him come out of there, and after I've whipped him over the fence or whatever, I'm like, I probably should have measured that because, I mean, they usually top out just under 6 foot. And I know I've thrown some out there like 7 foot. There's a picture of me holding one, and I'm about 5'11", and I've got my arm up this high, and I've got a coil wrapped around my hand, and his head's on the ground. That is a big-ass rat snake. I mean, that is like Kribo-level rat snake. And they get freaking fat, dude. They get, like, yay big around. And so how big do they get if you just, like, just keep feeding them and see what happens?
I'll bet they'll get as big as indigos, man. I caught one just the other day. It's sitting in a Rubbermaid inside. I've got to go let go. And at the same thing, the guineas were all over him. I'm like, I wonder if that thing's dead. It was half through a chain-link fence. And they were all over him, and he was just sitting there. And when I picked him up, he was just cold. Just hadn't warmed up.
You need to move SOE down to Texas. Then we could hang out, and you can now own indigo snakes without a permit in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you guys have real indigos.
You can't even have a mangrove snake. You could have an indigo snake down here.
We could do a reptile podcast.
Yeah.
Now, we need the hashtag for John moving to Texas.
Yeah, John's not
moving to Texas. No, Nicole, I'm putting it on.
Hashtag SOETX.
Yeah, John was born in Texas, in Beaumont.
Yeah.
Beaumont. That's about as redneck Texas as it gets.
It's a lot bigger than it was, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Question, what are y'all's thoughts on geese?
I have two. I want to say I've had them for 12 years now. I think I have two boy geese because I don't ever see goose eggs.
Yeah.
They break up fights between the ducks. I assume they probably keep possums down, but I've got dogs all around, so I don't really know. They make a lot of noise, you know, when something's going on.
He said he wanted three, though, for meat. Unless you're going to get them really cheap, that's not going to pay off. Geese have gotten expensive. Like goslings, like a pair of Toulouse goslings, male, female, like $100 now. Some like the pilgrims and all that I keep, they're like $120 a pair. So just a single meat run, I mean, I don't know how old these goslings are, where you're going to get them. If you're going to go steal them from the park, man, go do it. Geese will go, the right breeds anyway, will go from gosling out of the shell to ready to harvest for meat in 11 to 13 weeks on grass alone. That's a great component of them, but I've had bad results with hatching. I got this one girl goose, and she always wants to be a mommy, but then she just bails. And so what she does now, she steals ducklings.
That's what ours do, yeah.
Yep, so she just steals it. Once the ducklings are about 3 weeks old, they start to feather out, and mom's kind of tired. They just kind of move in, and they just take them, and they mother them, and that's great. But they're great in a flock. Just know what you get is going to have a lot to do with temperament. Like if you get like the Chinese or whatever, the really big ones, they're a lot more aggressive. And I was talking to several people at Nicole's thing a couple weeks ago about having aggressive geese. And like, there's a real simple way to deal with aggressive goose, and it's not killing it. When they come after you, just gotta get down on one knee and they'll come after you and let them come. It's a goose. It's not a freaking Tyrannosaurus Rex, right? No, don't grab them. If you grab them from the front, they'll wing beat the fuck out of your face. If you grab them from the side, they kind of like lock up, and that's a good way to pick them up. You just let them come in, and when they stick their head out, you just smack them. And I don't mean you smack them like Hulk Hogan. And that head will come in, and you just, and about four of those, and they're like, you know what? This doesn't work with this person. And they'll stop. They'll get to where they know you, and they're like, no, don't go do that to him. My wife would never do it back when we had a big flock of Toulouse. And they would just, I could lead them around. They were all cool and all. She wouldn't do it. And they used to bite the shit out of her. One day I was over in the field working. She got home. I heard the gate. She comes in. And they say, I hear a bunch of screaming and I hear a bunch of honking. And I'm like, I better go see what happened. I go over there. The back of the 4Runner's open. There's like one of these giant, like 24 roll toilet paper things laying on the ground. And the geese are gone and the wife's gone. And I'm like, I know what happened here. So I go in the house. As soon as I walk in, she goes, do you know what happened? I'm like, let me see. You got home. You were unloading the groceries. The geese came after you and bit you. You threw the toilet paper at them and ran in the house. She's like, did you see it? I'm like, no, I just followed the clues.
The trail.
But they're great birds, right? They really are. It's just, I did a podcast a while ago. If you just a geese hatching, I guess you could probably find it on my site, with a lady that they hatch geese all the time, and she went through all the procedures they use, higher humidity and things like that. And what they basically do is they take the eggs from the geese that are when they're broody, and they give them fake eggs, and when they hatch, they bring the babies back and let the parents raise them, and that works out really well for them. But I don't know, man, if they're not gonna hatch their own, I'm not doing it.
Fair. I have zero experience with geese.
Impressive. Yeah.
When is the April raffle drawing, John?
Maybe tomorrow, maybe Friday. We don't know. Every time we're going to do it, we've just had storms and stuff. It'll happen.
Yeah. Excellent. Oh, Triple's on.
Haven't heard him for a while.
Yeah, African Grays can get really aggressive. You were going to talk about Hardway, Alaska, though. Yeah, go ahead.
He said if you're going to steal geese from a park dressed like an illegal and you won't get in trouble. Carry a clipboard with you.
Oh, there's a
research to a college. We did that when we were cast netting, and it's legal here, but sometimes it attracts attention, and we're just out there with me and our mutual friend Nicole. We're doing research for UTA.
That makes sense.
It just makes people go away. You don't have to explain anything to them anymore. What are
Question.
You writing down?
None of at your what age do you introduce theory. Baby chicks to a flock, and at what age do you switch the chicks to adult food?
Huh, that depends.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you're talking about when you're brooding them yourself, by the time we introduce them to the flock, they're feathered out. I will tell you that, with ducks anyway, and the same thing with chickens. And what we generally do, we have these cages that act like tractors, and once they're big enough to be outside, they go in those cages. We move them around, and as we get close to introduction, we start actually putting them near the coop, and then at night, we'll actually put the cage in the coop. We do that for a couple of days, and we just let them out, and we've never had a problem with adults attacking young ones. I think chickens are more aggressive than ducks, though. With chickens, we get them up to a size where we think they can handle it. We wait till everybody goes to bed.
Yep.
And they get up on the roost, and they get in that kind of chicken trance where you can pick them up and they don't really know what's going on anymore. And we just set the young ones next to them on the roost. And chickens have a pea brain. So I think they wake up and they're like, guess you were always here. And then everybody gets along. That's what we do.
Yep.
What I do is I raise the chickens outside in a chicken tractor with a door. And when they are of the age that I'm comfortable with it, I'll let them out just the last hour or two of the day.
Yep.
And everybody intermingles, and we do that for a little while. And then one day, they get ushered towards the coop at go-to-bedtime.
Yep.
And nobody cares.
Yep.
But at what age do I do that? When it feels right, when it seems like they're going to, like when I don't need to have them with a heat lamp or whatever.
I would say like my last group of ducks, the ones that you helped me change the largest diaper on planet Earth with, Nicole, they were probably 6-7 weeks. But I like you said, like guesstimate, like I think it's going to be all right. Like I've never had young ones released into a flock and then they're just like beat up and hammered.
And
I've
usually
seen young roosters. Now I've seen young roosters, and the old man rooster right away is like, let me explain to you how things are going to work around here, boy. I've seen that, but anything else, I've not seen any problems.
And I'm usually putting 50 out there at a time, so it's kind of overwhelming for everybody. And I'll grow them, like we'll get them tractor supply even, and we'll put them in 100-gallon stock tanks with a heat lamp. And now for heat lamps burn a lot of shit down, guys. Like my shit is where it can't burn stuff down. But they've got these brooder mats now that have legs on them, so the birds get underneath, and it's like a reptile heat pad that can't catch fire.
Cool.
And you see those a lot. Once it's warm enough and they're fully feathered, because we're getting them, it's still, you know, having frost on the ground a lot of times. I put them in a tractor that's a 10 by 12, and I had them in there for like 6 months even. They were fully laying in that chicken tractor nest box, and when we put them in with the other flocks, they were laying eggs all over the place. So it took them quite a while to figure out where to lay eggs, so be aware of that too.
That's just making an Easter egg hunt for you.
Yeah. Like, we've run them way too late in the tractors where there's nothing on the ground. Like, there's literally starting to snow. And that's when we've moved them also. And there was just nothing for it. We couldn't move it. There was just too much snow and ice. And we've run them in there and not even had them expire off of that. Like, it's cold. There's just 50 of them in there. And just they're producing enough heat to run them. Like, if you look at Curtis Stone, he's kind of doing the same thing. He uses a row house for his run, but the chickens are fully exposed in a coop. Like, he doesn't even fully enclose it in where they sleep.
Yeah.
And he's got 6 feet of snow on the ground.
They'll huddle. The issue with your chicks is before they put feathers on, they really can't stay warm very well. And if they get wet, they'll go down. Baby ducks, when they get wet, until they learn how to preen, they'll die really quick. That's why we developed the thing for when you're brooding ducks, just take some hardware cloth and make like a frame and then put it like a catch, something shallow to catch water underneath it, and put your water on top of that. Because ducks, as soon as you give them water, they just start trying to play in it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's on the floor of the brooder, they end up wet. Then they all get cold. Then they all go under the light. And either the ones on the outside will freeze to death, or the ones in the middle, they cramp so tight, they'll actually crush each other. So if you keep them dry, that doesn't happen. And once they learn to preen, it's on. Like, you'll see one, like, start to, like, something kicks in the little duck brain, like, maybe I should do this. And then they all mimic each other, and then you're gold.
And once when you're at
ducks to, like, 4 weeks, they're like Mack trucks.
And when you're at Tractor Supply and you're buying your chickens and you get a few of those ducks and you put them in the same brooder together, it's those ducks that are going to really make that just a wet, soppy mess. Yeah, if you keep them separate.
I made that mistake once.
We all have.
I was like, I could just raise them together. I was like, I cannot raise these critters together at all.
No, they fuck shit up. Okay. They'll also, sometimes as they get older, the chickens will start actually picking on the ducks, like pulling their first feathers out and fucking them up too.
So here's a question from Charles. What are each of your current lineup of social media apps, starting up a new show, podcasting, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, X, etc.? Video and audio? Question mark. Thanks.
I hear ducks right now.
Yeah. Those are your ducks or Jack's ducks?
Those are mine. They're mine. Yeah, they're happy because the rain is making them happy.
Yeah, that does make ducks happy.
I do mostly X, and I am back on Facebook a little bit, and Noster. And I'm on MeWe and Gab, but I pretty much post and ghost there. And then we have Telegram groups and channels. As far as broadcasting, I'm on every platform I can stream to. For some reason, the guy was saying something about Rumble today. For some, the Rumble stream with RMTP doesn't always work, and it didn't work today apparently. But I streamed to Rumble because if you're going to use streaming software, it's pretty easy to add these platforms to stream to. But most of my traction actually comes from audio, and it's from Apple Podcasts, it's from Spotify, it's from Pocket Cast. Like some of these like second tier podcast platforms like Pocket Cast. I was shocked. I went over and checked it out. I have like 8,600 subscribers on Pocket Cast. I didn't even know that was a thing until somebody told me about it. So I would make sure you get on all. Now, I don't ever remember like putting my show on there. And I think a lot of these second tier ones, once you're in Apple, they just grab it like once a week. They rake the database and pull the RSS feeds in. And that's the one you've got to do. So I know a lot of people now call themselves podcasters and all they have is a YouTube channel. No. And it's not some like I'm an old guy and you have to have an RSS feed. You're missing the biggest segment of your market. If you do not put your content on a blog with an RSS feed and register with the podcast apps, because I'll do a video and we'll get over a couple of days, 3,000 or 4,000 maybe views of it if we're lucky. And that same show will get 190, 200,000 downloads on the audio side.
Yeah, it's 100x for me on audio versus video.
Yeah. So, and I think maybe that part of that might be because I'm an old school podcaster and I did the show for like 11, 12 years before we even had video streaming that I was doing anyway. So my audience, my old school audience is buckled into that. But if you think about what podcasting really started as and what it is, like, one of the reasons people love audio so much is the, I always say it's the one form of information and marketing that people can multitask with. Like you can't really read and drive a car, right? You can't really work and watch a video without getting fired if you work for John anyway, right? But you can listen. And so that's like why audiobooks, like, and I'm not talking about like Audible now, I'm talking about like marketing, like where people would actually pay to have 1,000 cassette tapes made where they were promoting a product and mail them out, because audio is so portable and so multitasking. If you're leaving that out, I think you're missing a huge potential hit.
Yeah, I would say it kind of depends on what you're putting out too. So I've seen people explode on TikTok who they just link into that format really well and it works with them. And so if I was starting something new and didn't know, I would be doing my best to be on everything until it was clear which one was working for me better, and then double down on that.
If you notice, too, like, there's people that are huge on one, and they're on another, and they're nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got nothing on X.
You know, like, so certain things worked. And the other thing I've noticed, like, with YouTube, most of the big YouTubers have a thing, right? They have a single thing. They're not a variety thing like we kind of are. They're like, all they talk about is aquaponics, right? Or all they talk about is entrepreneurship. Or all they talk about is mushrooms. And those are the people you see, or like keto. Like you see guys like Thomas Dallaire and Ken Berry with 2 million subs. They have one thing and they just hammer it and hammer it and hammer it. And so I think that has a big dependency on it too. Like YouTube subs seem to really like themed presenters. where like audio podcasts, they kind of like the whole Joe Rogan, like you never know who you're going to get.
Yeah. That's also true. Also, YouTube does have a podcast designation that I haven't played with, but I'm about to. And it seems if you have the time to do that, you might as, if you're doing a podcast too, tag the podcast as podcast, because I believe that's going to be served up differently.
So yeah, what you do is you set it up so anything in a particular playlist is a podcast, and then you just always include your broadcast in that playlist. And you, it takes like 5 minutes to do it once, and you never have to do it again. Other than you do need to say, this is in this playlist. So I have, if you go to my channel, you'll see survival podcast episodes. And it only goes back like 3 years when they started doing that. I can't say that it does anything, that it helps in any way. I really don't know, but it was really easy to do it. It doesn't hurt. And that way somebody can come to the channel and see like all your podcasts differentiated from, you know, here's my backyard garden or whatever.
Also, if you're trying to grow your Rumble, for instance, and you're going to go through like StreamYard, right? You're going to use one to push to all. You're going to get more propagation, and they're going to basically reward you for doing a Rumble podcast. That's what you're seeing Tim Pool and The Gathering and all those dudes do right now. They do a Rumble podcast, and they have it set up where one does it at one does it at two, one does it at three, and they're getting more push off of those Rumble only. When you put it up on Rumble, it asks you, is this made only for Rumble? And they know, like if I take a YouTube video and share it to Rumble versus the other direction. I think that's probably why we don't have any reach on X, because I share stuff other places to X and it puts that URL, but I've never had but one or two people jump over to a live and say, hey, I'm here from X. Whereas we do from, you know, YouTube, and I use StreamYard to answer your question. That's what we're on right now. And it's pushing to my YouTube and my Facebook, and then wherever Jack has it, wherever Nicole has it pushed also. And because I've got the, I don't know, I've got the third tier, the highest level on here, I can propagate to six different locations from this stream.
Yeah.
There
and
we go.
The other thing is, so StreamYard is great, but I've also used Restream, which is harder to use, but it is better and more flexible. So if you're, you know, depending where you are in your video journey and how much, how often you're going to be sharing different screens, like Ryan Hall, y'all, you've seen the setup he has. I don't know if he's using Restream, but if you're doing a lot of jumping around and more of that visual representation, because the other thing between Jack and me is we're more of an audio content, even though it's on video. Like, this is audio content on video, right?
Yep.
We're not, like, showing you charts and things. Restream's pretty cool, too.
So I think he might be talking about, though, there are apps where, like, you can say, I'm going to make this one post, and it goes to your Telegram, it goes to your Twitter,
like
it goes to your Facebook.
Or whatnot.
I don't use any of those, because
me neither.
Even if I'm going to post in Ghost, like, so what I do is I make my blurb for my daily email, and that goes in a text file, and that text file at the end of the day gets copied and pasted into the email program, and that gets sent out to my subs. Whatever that is what's going on social media. So it's as simple as just I have across my browser top, like, a bookmark for each of the social platforms I use. Click it, send. And then while I'm there, did somebody ask me a question? Did somebody comment? Like, I'll do a quick scroll through my own shit. And that way, if somebody's like, hey, I have a question and it's like a book, send me a fucking email, do it right away, and I'll answer you. Or if it's a quick question, use that or do that. And that way I'm actually engaging with people, where if I could push it out with an app, then I wouldn't do that. And then social media is not social unless there's social things happening to me.
A lot of them, too, now, these platforms know you're pushing through an app and you won't get the reach that you would if you just went on. I make a post to Instagram, and then I make a post to Facebook. It's okay to share it from Instagram to Facebook. They're both within Meta. You'll get the same reach. Then when you copy paste off of Instagram and I take it into TikTok, or I go to make it as a post on YouTube, it won't even, it's not even there once you close that app. It's not even in my phone. You almost have to share it, save it to notes to get that. Also, if you go back into Instagram and you edit and copy paste, then just stop that. Don't make any changes. If you make any edits inside of Instagram, it'll pull it out of your propagation also. So there's a bunch of, like, when you see me on five platforms, I've literally made that post to five separate platforms. other than when you do an Instagram reel, it will automatically post to reels on Facebook. But I also make that post as a post on Facebook. It's a full-time job. Like, yeah, you literally need a person to do all of this propagation on there. And then,
and I think all of us were playing with like the AI tools that pulled out segments.
They're killing you now.
It didn't work. What I figured out, though, what's cool about StreamYard, you don't always have to stream with StreamYard. You can just video. Well, you can change the layout. So instead of being like we are here where we're like widescreen, you can change it to vertical. And you can do a quick video for a TikTok or for an Instagram that is a one-off, and you can do it. What just happened? It went away.
I was hitting one of your views to see if it would look interesting.
No. It's not the views down there. It's in the settings for your audio and your camera. You can just change it to vertical orientation. And, you know, I've got a camera sitting right here all the time anyway. So I've been playing with it, doing things like I'm going to do a show today when I had the mushroom lady on. So I'm like, this is really cool. Here's what we're going to talk about, whatever. And just post that to TikTok. Just to funnel traffic into that show. And if I'm going to ever build up one of these secondary social media things, that's how I'm going to do it. Like, I've thought about, you know, making a new TikTok thing like Uncle Jack Says to kind of go along with my book, just advice to young people from an old fuck. And that one off is probably better, you know, and push that to your main brand than just taking and repurposing content. Because like John's alluding to here, I think they've started to like say, hey, when you put something on our platform that's unique to us, we're going to give that kind of some gold stars in our algo, where when we know it's just multi-platform, we're going to give it some demerits.
And the exception to posting in two places at once is that you can use the business suite, Meta Business Suite, and post to Instagram and Facebook posts. And I have not noticed when I do that or use their scheduling tool that I get a demerit on attention. But that's using their actual native tool for that. And yeah, to Jack's point, if you don't go back in and interact with the comments, then that is not as good. It's not as desired.
Yeah, always interact with your comments, especially like on X. I'll tell you, like, so many comments on you, and you comment back to them, all of a sudden they're seeing you. Where they may, even if they're following you, they may never see you. And Kevin was asking about OBS. People told me about it when I got into this. I don't even know how it works because I don't care. If you have StreamYard, you don't need anything else. Like, it's, you add a destination and you click a button and it's in your stream. It's, you pay more for what John and I have where you can do 7 platforms, but I don't know. I mean, it's not enough money for me to worry about. If I wasn't making enough to pay for it, I couldn't do this for
$30 a month or something.
Yeah, it's cheap. Yeah.
All I need is to sell one shirt
from
one of these platforms to cover the entire month.
Yeah. And I do referrals too, so I don't think I've actually paid a bill for 6 months.
Yep. Okay.
What's your content going to be about, Charles?
Okay. This is more of a business question for John. If you are using the approach of, if you find a higher price than my item, we will match it, how do you actually get your business started with that messaging?
I don't know what he's talking about. I think what he's saying is, when guys come on and they're like, hey, how do you feel about this other company making this similar thing and they charge more? I'm like, well, then I would raise my price. You have to be the best. Like you can't just start that business. You can't do a lot of the shit you hear me say that sounds outlandish as a new business owner. You have no traction. You have to build that name. You can't come out of the gate as an unknown where nobody's had any of your product and there's not 1,000 dudes that are going to show up and go, yeah, this is the shit. You can't just paint a painting and put it up for $5 million. Somebody has to co-sign that shit. You have to have some history with that. And I do question when people ask me questions about business and I give them the answer, I do question if they can duplicate that. Because even if you took me away, which I was, right? I was in prison for 2 years, came back and started with absolutely zero, brand new social media. But I'd been in business for a decade. People knew who I was. So I question if that can work for everybody, some of the things that I do, if they could do it if they weren't me with that history.
I think also the question could be, if I'm starting a business, one of my promises is that if you find the item I'm making for cheaper, we'll match that cost.
Yeah, we're not doing that shit.
Yeah, we'll do that. Don't do that. The only way that works is if you're like going in with a lot of volume.
Yeah, so, you gotta.
Yeah, so this makes me think like a long time ago when we used to use radios for communication for our construction crews, there was this Asian dude that we did business with, and some guy came in with an ad about some product he sold, and it was like $20 less. And he kept pointing at it and trying to get this Asian dude around the shop to deal with him. And finally, the guy just snatches the freaking paper out of his hand and goes, if you want this for this much, and he pointed at the logo, go there, and handed it back to him and pointed at the door. That, yeah, I mean, yeah, like I'm not doing that. I would, and I think he's more like a stoneworker or something, like doing craft trade, that guy, and that's why he has that name. So like, you can't tell me that this person does what I do for an equivalent, just like they can't tell you that, John, because you're building gear and your gear is built to a different standard. Can you get a belt for less money? Sure. Can you get a John Willis approved belt for less money? I don't think you can.
I don't think you can either. And it's not me saying that, right? Guys are like, hey, can you, I just ordered this thing. Can you ship it today? No, I can't. Would you like me to refund you? Yeah, I'm just going to get it someplace else. Those dudes always come back and go, hey, I got that other belt, but I ordered yours and your belt is way better than this other belt. It's not me looking at them. It's the client saying that.
Yeah.
And Scott King's right. 100 relevant comments a day on any platform. Go in there on your competitor or people doing the same thing and answer those questions. People will then look at your account. You'll gain followers also. The other thing too, like on Instagram, it's that first 15-minute window on the comments. When I make a post on Instagram and people comment, when I reply to those first 15-minute window, they boost that right there. If I come back in 2-3 days later, Instagram doesn't care.
Yeah.
And then when you're on YouTube also, you can have your notifications. When I scroll down on my notifications, I've got tons. These are all notifications just while I've been on here. This is Instagram. Yeah. It's YouTube. And you see comments. I can go into comments. I can heart it, which means the account hearted it. And then I can thumbs up or like it, which means it gave it a thumbs up and a like. That tells the person that posted it that the people who own the account saw that. And then if there's a relevant question or you have something to add or you have the time to, you can leave a simple comment. And make sure your comment is 5 words or more when you leave those comments.
Yeah, and make it legit.
And also,
that was really cool, you know, or whatever, like something that is engaging.
Yeah, and if
John's right, like you want to be as early as possible because there's more chance the content creator will see your comment if you're early on it. Like that's like if you're on X, the way to do that is create a list. Because you don't see so many people that you subscribe to on X or follow on X. So what you do is you create you create lists and you add the accounts to these different lists. And that way you can tab through and like see all the people that you follow about soil microbiology because I'm a nerd or all the people you follow about guns or all the people, whatever you do, you can make these different lists. And when you click into that list, what you see is a chronological list of everything. All the people on that list in the order that like the most recent ones at the top and every single one's on there. Even the following tab is dog shit. They put all kinds of crap in there with people you do not follow and they put all kinds of crap in there that you like the 20 posts from one guy and the person you really want to see you don't even see them. I've had so many people tell me like even in the following tab, I didn't think you were on X anymore. And then they'll find one thing from one of my little gimmicks. Like right now I'm doing a poll on what were the best 80s rock ballads? Like just that, to get people to do something, to comment, to vote, to click, to like, to share. Like anything you can do, once that connection is made, then the algorithm is like, oh, these two, like let's show them more.
Also, when you answer the question, ask another question because they're going to come back. And ask other people because when people are scrolling through your comments, they're going to expand those ones where they have multiple sub-comments first. So if you answer the question, ask a question and then go, hey, what do you other guys think? What's been your experience? And Scott King is right. If you can create controversy, my other website is Controversy Willis. I have a friend that owns a company called Controversy Clothing. There is no such thing as bad publicity. So if you like, look at the people that show up, I'll have posts where it'll say to autocorrect something. I'll leave it. I'll glaringly, intentionally leave something spelled incorrectly because dudes will show up. And when you look, it's their first comment ever. People are always going to show up. It doesn't always have to be the structure. And then if you can entertain, educate, equip, right? if I have something entertaining that's going to capture their eyes, and then you educate them, give them some piece of knowledge about what it is you do that they might not have known that they needed or wanted, and then a call to action is the equip, right? We sell equipment. What can I sell you? But even most people fall flat. There's never a call to action. Hey, join my email. PM me for this information. I have this free thing I'll send you. Whatever it is. But most people put out content and then they get nothing for it. You have to have that call to action, whether it's a sale or a click-through link. And now a lot of times you're seeing people say, especially big content guys, don't actually even put a link like you're trying to sell something. Just put out content where you're wearing the shirt. It doesn't even have to have a link. The guys that want it will go and look for it.
That leads me to an X hack that I just picked up. X is actually devaluing posts with links in them now. They want pure content. So what you do is you make your post and you put your link to your thing as the first comment and it'll thread for you.
Yep. Put it in the comments.
Yeah. That's because they're trying to get people doing more native to the platform content rather than just aggregating content.
Yep, and they're saying hashtags are dead on Instagram. That's where we put them, or I tag people in the comments.
Just
that
get AI to do
right
it for you.
Was worth the price of admission today.
Just get AI to do it for you on the hashtags. It'll just give you a fucking list. Like, say I'm doing an Instagram post. Here's my, like, fix my summary, and it'll throw a shitload of hashtags in there, and that way they're there.
Yeah, we pay for vidIQ, which populates on the taskbar. So when you're putting up a YouTube video, it'll actually rank all of your, where you rank, you know, hey, you try this title, it'll do an AI thumbnail. It'll do all kinds of stuff. And you get a lot.
I've got a lot of AI use for getting titles. Like I did the one on the third party printers yesterday, and it gave me a list of titles. And like one that I didn't use, but what I thought was really good is the tool my wife won't put down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, you know,
Scott King, what do you do, man? Your comments are good.
He's on fire. Yeah. Misspelled words. I have a line on my ChatGPT prompts to include a fat finger typo in the first paragraph, and then everybody has to correct you.
Yep.
Which gets your comments. I don't fix my typos. I'm like, it happened.
Yep. Yep. I always tell people when they say you have a typo, that means you read it.
If you look at, like, we'll have a customer that'll be an asshole to Amanda or something, so I'll read his emails and we'll use his name as a discount code. And that's what Jose here is referring to, thanks to the Lee Sanders code. And we get way more traffic. If you look at all my posts for last week, the one where I blasted Lee Sanders has the most amount of comments on every single platform. Dude ordered a $25 headband wrap for his hearing protection and said, this is absolutely ridiculous. If this doesn't ship, I'm going to cancel my order. I'm never ordering from your company. I'm like, oh, you're absolutely right. Your money's refunded. And you're right. You're not ordering from us because you're no longer welcome as a customer. Use code Lee Sanders for 20% off anything in this category. We did a little 60-second video. It's still getting comments. It had 20 comments this morning, notifications on it.
Lee, is why that entire shelf is sold out now.
We had a dude ordered a little covert pack and wanted to carry a weight plate in it for rucking. And I go, this is not the bag for that, man. There's no waist strap or nothing. He's like, okay, cancel my order. We went ahead and put him into the drawing for the giveaway anyways. And that dude won a $1,000 package, but we had wrote through, right? We didn't let any of his win because he canceled his order, but we put them in. And the first cards drawn were that dude would have won a $1,200 LBV package. But he canceled that order and he got on and he's like, oh, son of a bitch, man. I should have just left that order in place.
It's always great to learn lessons the really memorable and hard way.
The you know, the old trainer thing is there's two ways I can reinforce information with you. I can use pain or I can use pleasure.
Yep.
And I would prefer to use pleasure, but pain works better.
Pleasure's fleeting.
Yep.
Pleasure's easier for us, but pain is more memorable. And you might lose that dude, but you'll gain a million more off of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you've ever touched an not like the little bitty, like 1 mile chicken one, like if you've ever accidentally touched an electric fence wire that really pops, you probably aren't going to do it again. You'll remember that.
100%.
Right, Nicole? Get it with your finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, pain's more memorable. We used to get accused of making it up. They're like, they have to fabricate these. These aren't real people.
No.
It's like, no, you don't.
Because the best sales I ever did was the Travis vegan guy that just got annoying as shit, and I did the bacon sale. And I did it while I was on vacation. We paid for that entire vacation. I figured that was only the airfare that we paid for for that trip off that one sale. People bought freaking memberships for their dogs. Like, I can't do this because I'm already a member, but I bought a membership for my dog.
Yeah, we were on the way to Las Vegas when we launched a code, and we did $65,000 while in the air on the 4-hour flight off that code.
I totally lifted that from you. I was like, I know what to do with this guy.
Yeah.
He wouldn't go away and he wouldn't shut the fuck up. And I'm like, I got this, man. And for those that weren't around back then, the deal was you got a half price membership, but you had to eat a pound of bacon that week more than you would have otherwise. And you had to give somebody a pound of bacon. And the code was bacon. And then we made like these giant Dagwood sandwiches, of course, with bacon on the island that we were out on a boat trip, and we filmed a video, and we all waved to Travis and told him what a great guy he was, and thank you for paying for everything.
That went really well.
God, it was awful, but it went well.
We used to have him tag the actual guy on social media on Facebook.
So he knew?
Yeah, and he'd lock his account down, but now it's called, it's internet bullying or whatever.
Beef bacon was acceptable, Kevin. Any form of bacon would have worked.
I'm going to make beef bacon this year because I didn't know it existed until last year when somebody handed me some. I was like, I've got some beef belly. I can do that.
I don't know how it would work because they're not very big bellies, but apparently lamb bacon is a thing.
Oh, yeah. They aren't very big bellies.
No. I mean, I don't know how that would work. Maybe you do it like buckboard bacon or something, where you're not really using the belly. I don't know.
Now I need to go through my freezer and see if I have that part in there.
Yeah.
It was probably just ground.
Last time I was at one of Tim Love's restaurants, they had lamb brisket.
Yeah.
They sold it by the ounce. It was like $8 an ounce or something, but I got two ounces of it.
This is about how big a lamb brisket is.
It was good. It was
small, yeah.
It wasn't worth the money, but I did it because then I had it, right? Then I could say I had it. So my next project, I'm going to start messing with mushrooms. More than I already do. Having that chick on last week, we did the mushroom show, was pretty cool. But I never really knew what the whole deal was with king oysters. Do you know they taste like scallops? They taste like scallops. They get these huge round stems, and you cut them about an inch thick, and you score them, and you cook them in garlic and butter. And honest to God, it's not like they sort of taste like, they taste like freaking scallops.
I'm sure I've found some of those.
The king oyster. And the fact that you can grow a scallop in your house, like on wood chips, basically. And, I've got grandkids. I'm trying to get some entrepreneurial bug in them. Those things sell down at Whole Foods for like $30 a freaking pound. So I'm looking at building a mushroom room.
Nice. Mushroom room where?
Mushroom room. It's somewhere in the house. It's really a tent thing. I found a company called Northmore, and they have a thing called a boom room. It's all controlled, and so I'm going to play with it.
I have a big mushroom room out there.
Yeah, you live where mushrooms grow.
Yeah, it's great.
They don't grow here.
Chicken of the woods, I believe, is coming out right now.
Those are good.
Yeah.
Those are good.
I need to go to my spot today and check. Because I'm going out of town this week, and be checked before I go out of town, because it'll happen while I'm out of town and be dead if I don't. I don't know. John, do you look for mushrooms on your property ever?
No, I see mushrooms on my property ever, but I don't ever do anything with them.
Yeah.
You got to know what you're doing. We had a guy wrote in yesterday that said when he was a kid, his dad had a rule that if it had a pink underside, it was safe to eat.
Oh, no.
And then apparently he was wrong. And he almost died. And so this dude's been terrified to eat mushrooms because he saw this happen. His dad was like 12 years old. And we just did that show. And he's like, if I grow these things, is it safe? Because I'm like, if you're buying spawn, you know what you're growing. You know if there's any lookalikes for what you're growing, you're pretty safe. But, man, when it comes to wild foraging, unless you absolutely know, don't. And there's some weird shit in the mushroom world that doesn't make any sense except that it's true. Like when you make a compost pile and you get all those, they call them LBMs or little brown mushrooms because there's like a bazillion species of them. Some of them are safe to eat. But if you eat them and you combine them with alcohol, they can kill you. No.
Yeah, I don't mess with stuff like that. And if there's a look-alike mushroom, that's another one where you have to be careful, because we had some people think they found shiitakes here.
Uh-huh.
And there's a look-alike shiitake in Tennessee, and they were coming over from Japan, and they died.
Okay.
They ate the wrong look-alike.
Yeah, some of them.
You got to know for your region. Yeah.
My understanding, too, with shiitakes is they have to be cooked. That they're actually somewhat toxic raw. But yeah. I don't know if that's true or not. But Joshua here says some mushrooms will feed you for the rest of your life. Yes, they will.
Like when people say, can you eat that?
Yeah, the people like that figured out you could eat them. Like, you know, is there a categorizer? So Adam ate this one and he died, so we're not going to eat this one. Bill ate this one. He thought he was God, so we're going to use this one in moderation. And this one tastes like fish, so we'll eat a lot of this, right? Like, that's a, like I'm learning all these things I didn't know. Like, lion's mane tastes like crab meat.
Oh, lion's mane is delicious.
Yeah, so, I mean, thinking king oyster and lion's mane, like, yeah, we're gonna play with this.
There's one called a cauliflower mushroom. I can't remember its Latin name. It's like stroganoff noodles. But
really?
It's a mushroom, so you don't have the glycemic. I found one yeah. one time, and it was delicious. I just, oh, with beef and.
No. Well, I missed in 10 of the woods, because I used to get those by, like, literally the truckload.
Yeah.
We had places they grew, like, under every oak tree. And my uncle and I used to go out, and we would just literally, I mean, fill up the back of a pickup, and then we would drive to all the little bars and walk in with a bag of them and set them on a thing with a scale, and we would sell them. And this is back in the 80s, $10 a pound.
Yeah.
And we would sell half the truckload and then take the rest of them home. Like, and the thought that you have to go through all this crap to grow a mushroom now just pisses me off, but I'm going to do it anyway.
We have a morel patch on my property, Jack.
Yeah, I know.
It came 2 years ago. Well, it may have been there the whole time, but.
I saw you found some older ones and you had them in a little bag on the four-wheeler to help yeah. spread spores. That's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Sacred Seven. Yeah, I use that too.
Oh, I absolutely, I take that in my first cup of coffee every day, a little scoop of that Sacred Seven shit. When Nurse Amy went through all of the properties yep. of those mushrooms, I'm like, fuck it. It's too cheap to not do it. And it, when you look at the cost over a year, it's maybe $100 a year.
It used to say take one scoop. Now it's supposed to be, it's two. They've doubled yeah. the dosage recommended on it.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, they say that.
My wife's coffee, she doesn't even know it's there. You yep. can't taste it.
Mine never dissolves.
The same so, as that?
Like the last like schluck is always like grainy.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Yeah, just yeah. when you get down to like an ounce, just do the stir shoot. The centrifugal force thing.
Yeah.
Use the force, Nicole.
May the force be with you. Oh wait, that day's already passed.
We missed it. And we had Revenge of the Fifth.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I've never... Revenge of the Fifth.
Yeah. May the Fourth be with you and Revenge of the Fifth.
Yeah, because Cinco de Mayo is the Fifth.
It was a Sunday. We didn't have a show.
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo is the Fifth. We did a May 4th bag.
Yep. It was a very cool bag.
All right.
I did a coffee post for that. That was fun to do. Nobody noticed, though. Well... You guys ready to wrap for the week?
Oh, we're
the
month? Yeah.
I'm hungry.
I see no more comments. So let's just go once around the horn. I'm going to wrap up first. We'll go Jack and then John. So guys, if you want to connect with me, I do a podcast called the Living Free in Tennessee podcast at livingfreeintennessee.com. And more importantly, if you want to support anything I'm doing, get your coffee at Holler Roast. We do some awesome K-Cups that John and Amanda helped me dial in the flavor on those. Check it out, hollerroast.com. Jack, your turn.
Well, I am Jack Spierko, host of the Survival Podcast, and my book is coming out on Monday next week. It's called Laws of Life. And if you want to make sure that you get a notice that says, hey, it's available now, just cruise on over to thesurvivalpodcast.com and scroll down a bit till you see this with a little form in that post. Fill it out. We're literally, if you fill out that form the day after it launches, we're not going to bother anybody. I'll delete that list. It is just a notification list. There is some special additional content that you'll find out when you flip your book over and look at the back of the book, though, for some other things that will be available. And if you pick up a copy of it, maybe pick up one to share with a friend or two as well. Ideal demographic, honestly, people have asked me, it's for everybody, but 15 to 35 year olds that have been told that the all the opportunities gone or whatever, this book will gently kick your ass in the right direction.
All right, John, it's up to you.
SOE Tactical Gear is my website. You can find everything we're doing on there. SOE Tactical Gear is my YouTube, also Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. I do a live almost every night around 9 o'clock. And then on YouTube, I've got a ton of different video series that we do. So if you don't like one of them, there's probably one that you will like.
Awesome, guys. Well, we'll see you next month and make it a great one.
See ya. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, the others will follow. Revolution.